Okay, the cattle industry has been waiting for this for a while. USDA is releasing its results of the investigation into the cattle market. We'll get immediate reaction and offer up some added thoughts. And we'll dig deep into what has turned into a really strong week for demand for U.S. corn and soybeans. All right. Sounds like we might be missing Davis here. Oh, shoot. Hey, welcome to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We'll see if we can get Davis back here in just a little bit. Are you there?
Did anybody say live from Hump Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk?
I think somebody just did.
Minor malfunction. I'm fine. You want to know what happened? You want to know the technical reason? I mean, this is all very technical.
It's all very, very, very technical, yes.
Rather than running through my headphones, I had my computer system running through my Bluetooth speakers because I was jamming out while I was getting ready for the show.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And if I fail to turn those Bluetooth speakers off, the headphones just don't work. And I didn't realize until I heard the bell, and then I couldn't find the remote for the speakers. And so I had to get up and just unplug them. Well, then that threw the whole system off. I had to reboot, but we're back here. So apparently they tell me we'll have Colin Woodall from the NCBA and Greg Henderson from Drovers and Todd Bubba Horowitz as usual, right?
Exactly. We've got Bubba coming up, and at the end of the second half of the show, we're going to have a conversation with Ben Cash from Bauer Trading. So really looking forward to the conversations today. And if you didn't hear this morning, we are dealing with an issue in the South Bend studio, the national headquarters of Farm Journal Broadcast. Mm-hmm. And there is a potential COVID exposure to one of the employees in the building, not a Farm Journal employee, but one of the employees in the building. And because of that, an abundance of caution, we are producing a show with an empty studio. So hopefully you can all hear us.
Yes. Well, I can hear you now. So, you know, we got a good start.
That's right. Okay, we've got a lot of ground to cover. Let's go ahead and get started. What was moving the markets around?
Sure thing. Well, pressure on the U.S. dollar has helped to draw export demand to our market. Taiwan bought almost 100,000 metric tons of U.S. wheat, and Jordan is shopping for U.S. wheat. Dry conditions in Russian spring wheat areas is a new supply-side development that some traders are focused on that could encourage higher European prices, which provided a lift for U.S. prices earlier this year. Wheat futures finished off session highs today, but chart watchers say the picture is much improved compared to earlier this week. September hard red winter wheat 6 cents higher, 448.5. September soft red gained 6¾ cents to 534.5. September spring wheat 4¼ cents higher, 514¾.
Yeah, you know, this dollar thing has been, it's something that we talk about on AgriTalk quite a bit. Mm-hmm. It's something that we haven't talked about a lot lately, but with it making some lows down around 95 on the index, maybe it's something that is starting to provide some support.
Ethanol production in the weekend of July 17 averaged 908,000 barrels per day, down 23,000 barrels from the previous week. That's the first production setback since the recovery started from the late April trough. Ethanol stocks as of July 17 stood at 19.801 million barrels, down 807,000 barrels from the previous week. That suggested a strong blending pace, helping to support corn prices. September corn futures were 4¾ cents higher at 327.5. December corn gained 4 cents to 334¾. March corn closed at 344¾, up 3¼ today, Chip.
Yeah, okay, the ethanol report, I don't like that setback in production. I thought we were going to continue to push that number higher, but that 800,000 barrel draw on stocks, we're under 20 million barrels now. Our blending pace is pretty doggone strong.
USDA this morning announced the sale of 453,000 metric tons of U.S. soybeans for delivery to China. One of those cargoes goes in the current marketing year, with 387,000 tons for delivery in the 2020 and 21 marketing year. USDA also announced the sale of 262,000 metric tons of soybeans were sold to China for new crop delivery, and another 211,000 tons of new crop were sold for delivery to an unknown destination. That was a solid round of bean demand, but increasing political tensions between the U.S. and China capped buying interest in beans. Imagine that.
Before you get to the closes there, I mean, they had a bonfire in the backyard of the Chinese consulate in Houston.
Yeah, yeah.
They're burning up documents down there. This is as Cold War-ish as it has felt in the U.S. for a long time.
Never a good sign. August bean futures 2¾ cents higher, $8.99¼. September beans firmed at 3 cents to $8.94. Novi beans closed at $8.95½, up 2½ cents. Chip. On the cotton side, October 17 points lower, 62.74. Dece fell 41 ticks to 62.54. And on the livestock side, August live cattle futures were 35 cents lower at 101.50. December cattle slipped 17½ cents to 110.12½. August feeders gained 20 cents to 141.52½. And finally, August hogs, $1.17½ higher, 52.65. December slipped a dime, 51.45. Chip.
All right. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Todd Horwitz, BubbaTrading.com. How you doing, Bubba?
Better an empty studio than an empty chair. So what's up, Chip?
Amen to that. Amen to that. Hey, your texts over the past few days have been talking about divergence in the stock indices. Talk about that and what's going on.
Well, you've had some real wild movement. You know, when we have lack of liquidity, markets do crazy things. And for example, even right now, the Dow is up over 100, the NASDAQ is down. Okay, so what we're seeing here is people trying to pick markets here. And again, you get these major divergences, which really suggests that at some point, again, we know this is a bubble, and at some point it's going to burst. Now, it may burst sooner than later, but when you start to see these wild swings back and forth, that usually indicates a trend change is near. But that a near could be, you know, 60 days, 30 days, a day. We don't know when that will be, but this does suggest there is something going on underneath the surface. And if you take a look at the metals to go along with that, I mean, the metals have gone to Pluto. They're like, men that never go down again, and I think gold's going to make all-time new highs again. So I think that something's happening, going to change underneath the surface here, which would be awesome for the grain traders.
What do you think that this means? I think you just mentioned it there at the end. What do you think this means longer term?
Well, first of all, I think the grains have at least held support, especially corn, right? Beans are still breaking out. So I'm very confident with beans. But I think what it means for agriculture in general, other than the economy problems, but the overall shift maybe out of equities, which again, I don't know what's going to happen, but when it does happen, it will bring that new money that'll be looking for a place to go, and that place will be ag. That's always been the place new money wants to go when it can't go into equities. And I think that has been the true missing ingredient out of any of these big rallies we've had, is the actual dragging in other money from the markets other than just the farming trade and the hedging trade. So I think
Is it okay if I start talking about the cheaper dollar helping out our exports?
No, it doesn't mean it means nothing, baby. I mean, look, you can talk about it, but again, correlations only work if you try to play the correlation, you will lose. Okay, again, remember, corn. Where has corn gone since the dollar was $1.03? Okay, it hasn't gone anywhere. Okay?
Yeah.
So again, you can talk about the currency all you want. Central bank in the world is trying to reduce the value of their currency. So basically what they're trying to get to zero so they can get the digital currency, and boy, oh, boy, that'd be a nightmare.
Okay, Bubba, we got to go. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk to you later. We got Colin Woodall and Greg Henderson up next. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
America's conservation ag movement would like to recognize American Farmland Trust for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. We've got some breaking news this afternoon, and we want to get right to it and get some reaction in here. First off, let's bring in Greg Henderson. Greg is the editorial director at Drovers, joins us right now. Greg, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
Good afternoon, Chip. I'm fine.
Okay, well, it was almost a year ago that we had the fire at the Tyson plant in Holcomb, Kansas, right?
That's right, August 9th.
Okay. After that, some of the price action that we saw in the cash cattle market in particular raised some eyebrows, including my eyebrows, about what was going on in that market out there. Then, fast forward to the spring, we get into the pandemic, and we see the weirdest price action that we've seen. Now, USDA APHIS rolled this investigation into what happened post-Holcomb fire, early part of pandemic. They rolled that investigation into one, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
The Agricultural Marketing Service is actually the one that conducted the investigation. That's an arm of USDA. And their charge was to find out, you know, basically what happened in the market, what caused things, and then obviously they, you know, all of us out here in the country were calling this a black swan event, and then a second one, what the COVID thing. But basically the market did made similar reactions after these two events. The COVID reaction obviously was much more exaggerated, and it created a lot of turmoil for producers that got caught, you know, in owning cattle at that particular point in time.
Right, right. Well, I tell you what, I cannot wait to read the investigation and get to all the details, but one of the guys that has, I'm sure, has taken a look at what has been released is Colin Woodall, CEO of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He joins us right now. Colin, thanks so much for making time for us this afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, Chip. It's good to be back with you on the show.
You bet. Glad that you're back. What did you see in the initial report?
Well, first of all, we're just glad that we have a report. One of the things that we made very clear to USDA is they had to act fast because, as you said, we're almost to that one-year anniversary of the Holcomb fire, and they had told us they would get us something before the end of the year. Well, they didn't. Now, fortunately, we were able to roll the COVID crisis into this investigation, but we said, hey, we can't wait another 6 months to a year. We need some ideas. And so we are pleased that they were able to get it out in a timely manner. But as we look at it, there's some things in there that people aren't going to be happy with. You know, the fact is they come out and they say that they don't see any indication of collusion or market manipulation, but they do very readily acknowledge that there's a lot of issues that we need to address, packing capacity, for example, further transparency. And one of the things that we really keyed on is this discussion of having some minimum cash trade levels in order to have price discovery and some sort of trigger mechanism that could go along with that. I do believe that's going to be a big topic during our summer business meeting next week here in Denver.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Greg, the idea that we can get to a 50% cash negotiated market for cattle, it's something that Senator Grassley is pursuing, and I'm sure that he's going to have a reaction to this. Based on what you know from the report so far, Greg, how do you think Senator Grassley, who is going to be on the show tomorrow, how do you think he's going to react to this?
Well, obviously, the report does not indicate that there's any, you know, way that they could get to a 50% negotiated level. I think Senator Grassley is going to want to hear more. I think, and basically, the AMS does not have any authority to report on the scope or status of any investigation that any other agency from the government might be conducting. I think Grassley may well want to take this further.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he isn't calling for some hearings on this. Does the Department of Justice get involved in this, Colin?
Well, they're already involved. And I think that's a key component here is that this is a report just from USDA. But this is something that Packers and Stockyards has been coordinating with DOJ throughout this process. One of the components of this report is basically saying that Packers and Stockyards does not have the real teeth to be able to do the in-depth investigation that is needed in this scenario. And that is why the Department of Justice engagement is so important. We know that they have been in discussions with USDA and coordinating with them. We also know that they have been out in the countryside interviewing people throughout the entire beef supply chain in doing their investigation. So that's going on as we speak. So there is more to come on this in terms of whether or not there is any sort of criminal action that might have taken place.
Okay.
Colin, basically, this report, doesn't it tell us that the market worked?
You're right, Greg. It does. It says that these were market forces. They were unusual market forces, as you said, black swan-type market forces. But there was nothing to indicate that there was any sort of market manipulation outside of that. I think as we look back at this, we understand that it had a significant impact on our industry, a significant impact on prices. It's still having an impact as we look at what's going on in the cash market. And also as we look at the backlog of cattle that need to get into a packing plant. But you're right. It does very clearly say that they have analyzed this, and these were unusual market factors that had a tremendous impact on what ultimately happened to all of us as producers.
Yeah, Colin, you said it earlier that there are going to be some of your members are not going to be very happy with the results of this investigation. What's your message to them?
Yeah, well, it's not over. I think that's the key component. This is just one part of it. As we said, the Department of Justice is still looking at things here. You know, I think this is an important piece of the overall puzzle. We needed to see what USDA would find. There had been that call that we needed an investigation, a third-party investigation. I think USDA has delivered that. You know, there are a lot of individuals who believe that anything short of Packers going to jail is not going to be acceptable, but I hope that they will take the time to read what is here and understand that USDA spent a lot of time and effort to try to make sure that they had as much information that they could analyze, look at it from a true third-party viewpoint in order to provide us as the industry some of the best information we could get as far as what truly transpired. And more important is all the suggestions that they also put in here. They provide a lot of ideas of things that that we as NCBA can consider in our policymaking process that we could potentially work not only within the industry but also with Capitol Hill to see if we can make some improvements.
Okay, I was just going to say, is one of the suggestions that does it say, okay, if this is what it's like when the markets are working and the cattlemen suffered as much as they did under, some of the cattlemen suffered as much as they did under this, is one of the suggestions that we come up with some sort of protection that will provide them some cushion if something like this happens again in the future?
Well, you know, those are conversations that we're already having as an industry. You know, we went to Congress, we asked for the funding that ultimately ended up with the CFAP payments to try to help producers through this. But one of the conversations that NCBA is having at our summer meeting next week is what can we start working on now to get into the next farm bill to provide some crop insurance or risk management type protection programs that work. The risk management agency at USDA has some programs, but they haven't been funded at a level to truly make them effective for cattle producers to take advantage of. I think those are things that we can do on our own, even without USDA instructing us to or giving us suggestions to do that will help us try to provide some risk management options today that hopefully will help this from being so significant if there's another black swan event in the future.
Okay, Greg, we've got just a little bit of time. What else have you got for Colin?
Colin, there's a mention of in this report that there might be other risk management tools, maybe smaller tools. Are they referring to smaller contracts available to producers, or how do you read that?
You know, that one particular line that you're talking about, Greg, is there's not a whole lot of definition to it. So I think that's one where we're actually going to have a few more conversations with USDA on what they intend, because, you know, those are some conversations that the industry has had on, you know, are there ways to take CME products and make them a little bit more friendly to cow-calf producers, and also are there other pricing mechanisms, looking at boxed beef cutout, for example, are those things that we can look at. There's still a lot of work to be done in all of those arenas before we have really anything that we can capitalize on.
Okay, thank you.
Excellent. Colin, let's please stay in touch on this, and as your reaction and your analysis on this continues, let's get you back on and talk about it, okay?
That sounds great. Thanks, Chip.
Excellent. That is Colin Woodall, CEO of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, and Greg Henderson. Thanks, Cowboy. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers. First thing today, the U.S. State Department orders China to close its consulate in Houston. We talked about that earlier. U.S. imposes sanctions on 11 Chinese companies over human rights. That's a new development. Argentina and others take issue with China's push for COVID-19 guarantees. We've talked about this on the show. Several have expressed concern that the certificates would give China another arbitrary reason to limit trade. The worst flooding in decades has raised concerns over China's Three Gorges Dam. There are 40 million people impacted there along the Yangtze River. Negotiations begin on the next COVID-19 aid and stimulus package, and whether or not it includes a payroll tax cut is a big question. Make sure to check out all that Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. We are going to get to the conversation on what happened in the markets today with Ben Cash from Bauer Trading coming up here in just a second. But first, Davis, if you would, please, let's go ahead and recap how the markets closed.
Just kidding. I'm here. September hard red winter wheat, 6 cents higher, 448.5. September soft red gained 6.75 cents to 534.5. September corn futures 4.75 cents higher, 327.5. December corn gained 4 cents to 334.75. August soybean futures 2.75 cents higher at 8.99 1/4. September beans firmed 3 cents to 8.94. October cotton 17 points lower, 62.74. August live cattle futures were 35 cents lower, 101.50. August feeders gained 20 cents to 141.52.5. And August lean hogs were $1.17.5 higher at $52.65. There's your quick market recap. Back to it, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Ben Cash is with Bauer Trading. He joins us right now. Ben, first off, thank you so much for being flexible with your time here this afternoon. Really wanted to get Colin and Greg on to get some initial reaction to that investigation. So thank you and welcome. Thanks for your time, man.
Hey, not a problem. I appreciate you having me on here today.
You bet. You bet. You were listening in on the conversation there with Colin and Greg, I believe. The bottom line of the investigation, as Greg put it, was even though it was a disrupted market, the market still worked. I think there are some people out there that would disagree with that, and they say that it was all messed up. But you know, that was the argument that I had out of the gate too, was that it wasn't pretty. It wasn't, it was definitely ugly. It wasn't anything that anybody wanted, but it was working.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, that is, creates uncertainty in the market. What happens when there's uncertainty? The market usually sells off, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, that's basically what's happened through this whole corona mess too. You know, we were still kind of working through this situation, and, you know, I think the market did work through that fire process as well as this corona debacle that we're in here.
So. Yeah. You know, and go all the way back to the conversation with Bubba at the start of the show with the divergence between some of the indices. And I'm talking about, you know, the Dow hasn't been all that productive here the last couple of days, but the NASDAQ still has been. We're finally starting to see what many anticipated would be some pressure on the dollar. It feels like a lot of these markets, even though we're still in the middle of the pandemic, even though in many states the case count is going up, but it feels like the markets are starting to get their feet under them on how to trade in this COVID environment. Am I hoping for too much there, Ben?
No, I think we've become accustomed to it. We've discounted a lot of the news, you know, out there already. And, you know, we're getting back to the fundamentals, it seems like, you know, the supply and demand side of things. You know, the dollar here is breaking back down. It's losing that luster of the safe haven play as other countries overseas are opening up. They're doing their own stimulus, you know, so that safe haven play, you know, with the U.S. dollar doesn't, you know, seem to be needed, you know, like it once was, you know, mm-hmm. at this time. So, you know, once again, that is the luster is mm-hmm. wearing off there. You know, the EU just got done approving their stimulus package. We're going to keep our interest rates, you know, near zero. That yeah. leads to a weaker dollar as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, so it's been a pretty good week for export demand, and it's been a pretty good two-week period for export demand for U.S. corn, U.S. soybeans. Let's kind of focus on soybeans because there were some good numbers today that were that were released. Market feels like it traded it earlier this week. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what basically we're seeing here as well. You know, the chatter. It seems like a lot of these announcements are released a day before, then the market gets it and doesn't try, you know, quite trade the news like you expect it to. I mean, that was a pretty sad performance for the soybeans right out of the gate this morning. You know, obviously we ended the day higher, which is great to see. But, it seems like, you know, the news is released, you know, basically, you know, under the table there, and the market already mm-hmm. knows and trades it. So, but, you know, once again, all these purchases are what we need. You know, obviously it's somewhat of a good faith buying is what it seems like. You know, some may be politically driven to meet this phase one trade deal. You know, regardless, this is what the market needs. You know, if we're going to produce, you know, these size of crops, we definitely need a place to go with it. So China buying is definitely welcome. You know, if they continue it, obviously tensions out there are pretty mixed here, you know, on the trade side of things, on the political side of things. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be tough, and the market is going to be sensitive to that. You know, and I think that's what led to a little weaker market on the open for soybeans here today with that embassy news.
Right, right. You know, even you make a good point there. Even if it is goodwill buying, it's at least buying. It still feels like, though, the corn market, the bean market is full of skeptics in here, Ben. They're willing to say, okay, great, we made some sales, we'll put a little bit of support into the market, but until that corn leaves the country, until the beans leave the country, there's still a fair amount of skepticism that these beans and corn are actually going to leave the country.
Well, rightfully so. It is an election year in that, but you know, there's something going on underneath all this as well. You got $7 corn over in China. They're releasing every week, you know, anywhere between 3 to 4 million metric tons out of the reserves, and 100% is being bought. And it's been over, well, just the past 3 weeks, it's been over $6.50 a bushel. So, you know, there's a concern maybe on their production side of things from their end users there. They had dryness in the North China Plain early on. Maybe they had some germination issues. Now you got flooding in the southern part of China that's causing some issues in the growing regions down there, especially near waterways. And then there's reports of the armyworm showing up early on some corn acreage there. So there's probably something going on, you know, under all this, especially to see them buy and, you know, over 1 million metric tons on a daily sale of corn. You know, that's we never see that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it certainly makes you wonder. And throw in on top of that the Reuters report, I think it was just yesterday, that they may free up some of their rice stocks, some of their wheat stocks, make those available to their feed millers. That doesn't happen in that country. And to hear that might be going on, if that actually happens, they need more feed grain. period, end of story. So what is, back to beans here real quick. The export sales that we have seen here recently, if we can continue most of it, that's going to take a bite out of the 620 ending stocks for 2019-20, isn't it? Because I don't think that this level or this rate of export demand has been included in the balance sheet, has it?
No, I don't think it has. I think that can be raised here once again. Also, the crush number for old crop beans. I mean, you get these NOPA crush reports every month, and they're running near records. And, you know, we can definitely see USDA up old crop crush here on these reports. You know, and our growing season is far from over on the soybean market. Right. Looking at the production side of things, we're working with, you know, roughly a 50 bushel of the acre. Mm-hmm. You know, yield here on the soybeans. You take that down one bushel of the acre, that really changes the the S&D table quite a bit. You know, we're working with 425 on new crop soybean carryout. You know, you lower that carry in from this old crop. It don't take much to put it, you know, in the mid threes to low 300 million bushel carryout for new crop beans, and that is over $10 beans in a hurry.
You think?
Oh, definitely.
I was going to ask you what price. Go ahead and say it.
I said, well, hopefully then corn hitches a ride with the soybean market. Yeah. It's still a little tough for the corn to even get anything going here. But yeah, it's definitely over $10 beans for sure.
Yeah, and if we could get that kind of a move going in beans, that might be the trigger that gets the funds out of the short positions in corn, because they would be afraid that corn's going to follow along.
Oh, definitely. You know, we talked about this dollar situation. You know, mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, some people disagree on if the dollar is supportive to exports or commodities. It doesn't hurt. A lower dollar does not hurt, you know, if we're going to have these global buyers come in here.
Right. Absolutely. So where do you think this is such an unfair question. I don't even want to ask it. What are the trends that you see dominating that bean balance sheet as we get past the end of the marketing year, past the end of the current marketing year? What trends do you see really driving that balance sheet?
You know, the problem with that is it's got to be, you know, a lot of it hinges on weather here. August is the most important time for beans. So, but at the same time, this is the time where we start booking this new crop. You know, these sales that we're making right now are common. You know, that's the thing. But we need to, you know, that to continue even into while Brazil and Argentina get planting here this fall as well. So, you know, obviously a lot of end users globally, you know, particularly China here, they're getting some needs met as we're still at very low levels compared to, you know, just say the 5-year averages that we're used to on some of the, you know, some of these prices here. We're, you know, at the low end of it, you know, very low end, maybe 10 to 12 year lows on beans here. But I would still say we got a lot of livestock, strong crush number. I think that is going to stay steady here. I don't see any reason. Those crush margins are there. We got, you know, $300 a meal right now, you know, a ton. So that is helping out. Bean oil, the products are staying firm. Bean oil has recovered. So, you know, crush is not going away.
All right. Ben, I hope you can stick with us for the next segment. Because I know that you talk with clients all across the country. I want to know what your concerns are for this corn crop, concerns are for the bean crop. Are there any as we go into the end of the growing season? That's next on AgriTalk.
Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Grease hog there, isn't it, Davis?
I believe that is the grease hog. Yes, sir.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. There, somewhere off in the distance, is Davis. And we are talking with Ben Cash from Bauer Trading today after an early conversation with Colin Woodall from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Greg Henderson from Drovers. Okay, let's get back to the conversation now with Ben. Like I said at the end of the last segment, Ben, I know you talk with growers from across the country. Is there any area where you feel like, hey, you know what, this is getting overlooked, we need to pay attention, there's some problems here?
Yeah, definitely. Looking at this drought monitor, you compare it to a year ago, we definitely have some problems. We're dealing with a lot different moisture situation here through the month of July. We got western Iowa that continues to get missed by rains. I know, you know, there in southern Iowa, we had some showers move through yesterday. So this drought monitor is going to get trimmed up most likely here tomorrow when the USDA releases that. But we also have the eastern Corn Belt, majority of it, Indiana, northeast Indiana, continues to miss showers. Got a drink, talking to a few of our guys, about a quarter to six-tenths, you know, of an inch. Okay. And even western Ohio. So there's some problem areas out there. I think it will show up once the combines get running. Right now, you know, it's, you know, moving along in the vegetative state. I think that's why we didn't see the corn rating go down this past week. You know, it just tends to look better as it moves along in the vegetative state. You know, that's just the tendency of the ratings. But I think, you know, once the combines get moving, we may have some problems out there, because we did see some, you know, 90 to 95 degree heat. Indexes into the hundreds there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're not done with them. There's some heat coming this weekend, and the heat this weekend is the kind of heat that I think will speed up that plant just a little bit too much. We've got a couple of tough days, and it gets back to what Ken Ferry, Farm Journal Agronomist, always says: you never want your corn plant to have a bad day. I think there's a few bad days coming for that corn plant, so we need to pay attention to it. Ben, do you feel any urgency to get some risk protection in place on corn, on soybeans, on wheat, anything?
To the downside, no, not at this point. Okay. I think there's too many uncertainties. We're at low levels. I mean, you're not really profitable on corn, you know, down here. I think there's some upside. Funds are heavily short. I think there's a lot of uncertainty about the yield on corn. I'm not saying we're below trend line, but and we had that early frost on early planted corn. I think that may affect it. It did on the wheat. You know, talking to some guys on their wheat,
yep,
that early frost did kind of hurt it. So it could hurt the corn, germination issues. You know, the stands might not be there, too. But, yeah, the heat, you know, we had corn around here, you know, rolling up for 4, 5, 6 days straight during that, mm-hmm, that stretch that we didn't have a lot of rain here the first part of July, around that 4th of July time frame. And it definitely could affect the yield. Soybeans, you know, we still got a lot of weather. We touched on that. The month of August, most important. Beans are starting to look a little better around here since we got some rain here this past week, but we still got a lot of growing season there.
Yeah. Yeah, we certainly do. So watch for your opportunities, but as far as doing anything right now, you're willing to sit back and let these markets perform for a little bit, huh?
Yeah, for a little bit. You know, we've seen, you know, on soybeans, you know, it felt kind of like a double top there this week when we've seen it test 9 and then back off. I think, you know, funds were, shedding some risk here with a cooler forecast, but there's also a lot of cash movement for old crop beans that were guys cleaning out the bins. That's what, you know, also sold it off a little bit. You know, these cash basis levels actually declined a little bit this week, too, so there has been some farmer movement there.
All right. All right. Ben, hey, thank you. I appreciate your flexibility on the time so much today. We'll get you back on again soon. Thanks, man.
Hey, not a problem. Appreciate it having me. Thank you.
You bet. That is Ben Cash over at Bauer Trading in Indiana. Okay. Davis, we did get a reaction. We did get a reaction from you, from Senator Chuck Grassley. And as you know, he's been at the center of the – I shouldn't say at the center, because Senator Tester is also in on bringing some legislation that would require some changes on how things are done in the cash cattle market.
Okay.
All right. Now, he starts off by saying that he praised a recent U.S. Department of Agriculture review of market disruptions in the cattle industry and called on Congress to enact price transparency measures to improve fairness for consumers and independent producers. The report examined the market impact of an August 19, as we talked about earlier.
Right.
This is the telling part here, and I'm not too sure if I don't disagree or if I don't agree with the senator on this, and we'll talk about it tomorrow morning when he's on the show. But he just comes out and flat out says the cattle market industry is broken. Years of rampant consolidation by meat packers has led to unfair access for producers and easily disrupted meat supply for consumers. The ongoing pandemic has only intensified this reality. And like I said, we'll talk about that tomorrow with the senator. And I'm sure that he is going to be calling for hearings to take a close look at the details of the investigation. And well, he's already pushing his 5014 legislation that he and Tester introduced earlier. Real quick, National Weather Service, 6 to 10 day outlook. This is for July 28th to August 1st, 10 days away, August 1st. You got above normal temperatures expected in South Dakota, North Dakota, northern Minnesota, parts of and most of Michigan. Normal temperatures expected over most of the Corn Belt, and you even get some below normal temperatures in southeast Nebraska, eastern Kansas, western Missouri, southwest Iowa. Above normal precipitation is expected Kansas, Missouri, southern Illinois, southern Indiana. Below normal precipitation is expected Michigan, northern Illinois, Wisconsin, northern Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, and up into North Dakota. So it's kind of a mixed bag that we're dealing with there on the 6 to 10 day. And real quick on the 8 to 14 day, this is for July 30th through August 5th. The below normal temperatures move to the southern Missouri, Arkansas, southern Illinois area. And then we've got above normal temperatures expected in the Dakotas, Minnesota, northern Iowa, Wisconsin, northern Illinois, and a mixed bag on the precept front.
I'm going to get my speedo.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, thanks for listening today. We've got Grassley in the morning. We're looking forward to that.